Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who's also the co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy news for conservatives today, as usual. And if you liked our crazy martini yesterday, so did Megyn Kelly. She led her show with Jim's piece from National Review yesterday about the double standard and how the media looks at shooting events based on the facts and the mindset of the shooter and the fact that we're supposed to suddenly have controls on our speech as a result of the fact that it might set off a crazy person. So, Jim, congratulations on a fantastic day and a fantastic response to that piece yesterday.
Thank you. I think it's just a matter of, you know, some days you just happen to articulate what everybody else is thinking and just haven't gotten around to saying yet. And Glenn Beck had it on his program, too. So it's one of those days where you know you're hitting a chord. So it's great. And then the next day, you guys still got to be the same guy taking out the trash. That's great, Mr. Quoted on Megyn Kelly. Now, you know, put away the dishes.
That's right. Oh, man, that keeps you humble. All right, on to the good martini today, and I will be quoting liberally from this because over the past 3 weeks, we've talked about the atmosphere on campus where student whining and entitlement has gotten to the point where many different administration officials are either coddling them, giving into their demands, such as thinking about scrubbing every reference to Woodrow Wilson from the Princeton University campus, to people actually leaving their jobs, like at the University of Missouri. Well, we finally have one university president who is not doing that, to say the least. His name is Dr. Everett Piper at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. It's gotten quite a bit of attention over the past 24 hours. And here's quite a bit of what he said in a statement. This past week, I actually had a student come forward after a university chapel service and complain because he felt victimized by a sermon on the topic of 1 Corinthians 13. It appears that this young scholar felt offended because a homily on love made him feel bad for not showing love. In his mind, the speaker was wrong for making him and his peers feel uncomfortable. I'm not making this up. Our culture has actually taught our kids to be this self-absorbed and narcissistic. Anytime their feelings are hurt, they are victims. Anyone who dares challenge them and thus makes them feel bad about themselves is a hater, a bigot, an oppressor, and a victimizer. Then he goes on to offer this advice. If you want the chaplain to tell you you're a victim rather than to tell you that you need virtue, this may not be the university you're looking for. If you want to complain about a sermon that makes you feel less than loving for not showing love, this might be the wrong place. If you're more interested in playing the hater card than you are in confessing your own hate, if you want to arrogantly lecture rather than humbly learn, if you don't want to feel guilt in your soul when you're guilty of sin, if you want to be enabled rather than confronted, there are many universities across the land in Missouri and elsewhere that will give you exactly what you want, but Oklahoma Wesleyan is not one of them. And then at the very bottom, he says, this is not a daycare, this is a university, exclamation point. So as you can imagine, he's getting blowback from some sectors, but he's getting a lot of applause from the more appropriate sectors. Jim, good job, Dr. Piper.
It is, and you wish every university president could make some variation of this argument. It's a paragraph above. He says, Oklahoma Wesleyan is not a, quote, safe place, unquote, but rather a place to learn that life isn't about you, but about others. The slogan, this is not a daycare, this is a university. We have reached the point where we no longer expect people 18, 19, 20, 21, going up, you know, sometimes post-grad, even, you know, be older than that, to act like adults. I don't know about you, Greg. I can think of a book they probably could use. now available at Amazon and fine bookstores everywhere. But really, like, part of this, the reason we're seeing this on college campuses is that the people who are in charge of college campuses, right? You are the president of a college. You are an administrator. Your job is to administrate, right? Campus police, your job is to keep law and order, right? If somebody's protesting or blocking a way to get into a building, you remove them, right? They don't have a right to obstruct people from going to their place of work. Enforce the law. Act like you are in charge because you're supposed to be. And if you're not, you will be out of control. So I absolutely salute Dr. Everett Piper. I wish more university presidents would emulate him. And it's nice to know that it's possible. And it kind of indicates that every other university president who's not doing this is choosing to not do this. They see this example and they're saying, no, I'm going to hide in my office and hope the problem goes away.
All right, on to the bad martini now. And towards the end of this bad martini, we might actually have a significant twinge of good here. But Jim, to little surprise, it's been about a week now since the Turkish government, Turkish military, shot down a Russian plane that had wandered into Turkish airspace. The Turkish president, Erdogan, is getting quite a bit of grief at this climate change summit over the fact that the plane was not escorted out of Turkish airspace rather than shot down, despite Turkey claiming there were many, many warnings. But now there's a big back and forth between Erdogan and Putin. Putin claiming that the Turks shot down the plane to protect its oil supply routes from ISIS. Essentially, it's doing business with ISIS for oil. Erdogan says that is a lie and a slander, and he will resign if it is proven true, but wants Putin to resign if it's proven to be untrue. Our president's effort to reconcile these two leaders in Paris seems to have been a massive failure. And at the same time, we're finding out, though, that Al-Qaeda terrorists are reportedly declaring war on ISIS following a dispute between the groups over a prisoner exchange with the Lebanese army. So, Jim, while the more responsible actors keep fighting with each other rather than actually taking out ISIS, Al-Qaeda is now turning on ISIS. And who can explain any of this?
Well, I was going to say, the simplest way of summarizing today's bad martini is, great news, people. The force leading the fight against ISIS is Al-Qaeda. Everybody else is a little too distracted, bickering amongst themselves. It looks like Erdogan is trying to make a wager against Vladimir Putin about his claim that Turkey is benefiting from ISIS's oil trade. I would warn Erdogan to be careful with gambling with a Russian. You know how they do they've altered the rules of roulette. When the Russian airliner went down in the Sinai Peninsula, I think it was Stephen Cook had observed that part of the problem is here we're dealing with two different governments, neither of which has a good relationship with the truth. In Turkey, we're not that much better, particularly under this president. To paraphrase President Obama early in his term, this is not the Turkey I knew. This is a country that has been cracking down, that has been, Erdogan is the former mayor of Istanbul, is characterized as a quasi, a moderate Islamist, if there is such a thing, and a guy who has not always been the most reliable ally in these sorts of fights. For whatever reason, they are vehemently anti-Assad. Their primary focus has been on attacking Assad and then, making sure the Kurds don't get too powerful because they're concerned about a Kurdish breakaway state in the southeastern corner of their country. It would be really nice if these two countries could put aside their differences for now, if Russia could acknowledge that its planes should not be breaking the airspace of Turkey and they should be taking those warnings seriously, and if the Turks could point out that there is such a thing as warning shots and you don't have to shoot everybody down first chance you get. It'd be nice if everybody could calm down, but unfortunately, I don't think this is in the national character of either of these countries. And so we're left in a situation in which the biggest dogs on the block are busy, gnarling and trying to bite each other instead of focusing on ISIS and the bloodthirsty killers right just a little bit to their south. And that's where we are, Greg, and that's why we call it the bad martini.
That is extremely bad. Okay, on to the crazy martini, but back to Paris, where, of course, this climate summit is ongoing. The major theme here, of course, is that industrialized nations are bad. They need to cut back on their emissions. They need to help poor developing countries not contribute to the global warming problem as it allegedly exists. And it's important for everyone to do their fair share, to make sacrifices, to not contribute to the carbon footprint, blah, blah, blah. And so the best way to symbolize this, Jim, as you point out in the corner and in the Morning Jolt, is the fact that Obama and French President Hollande and John Kerry and a bunch of other folks are gathered in one of the very ritziest restaurants in Paris to model the fact that it's time to buckle down and do what's necessary to save the planet.
Like I said, in the corner in Morning Jolt this morning, Greg, there's no word whether Obama had the $36 sorbet. but that gives you a sense of the price of everything else on the menu. If your average meal could be $2.75, these are prices in dollars. I did the conversion. The euro and dollar are about the same right now. But if you really get the good stuff, it could be $350 a head. And you can look at this. The restaurant is very fancy. And talking about the need to preserve plant life, naturally, they have three flower centerpieces. In the need to stop burning fossil fuels, naturally, they have like at least four candles on each table. It's a shame, by the way, Greg, that Robert Mugabe, the Zimbabwean dictator, could not make it. He is in attendance, according to his people, representing the African perspective on climate change. We got to give him credit. There is nobody on earth who is better at getting people to stop carbon emissions. If you eliminate the people, you eliminate the carbon emissions they make. Now, of course, the whole conference is about sacrifice. The whole conference is about all the different things we have to do in order to stop this. And there are two thoughts. One is obviously, I think it was Glenn Reynolds who says, I'll believe it's a crisis when the people telling me it's a crisis start acting like it's a crisis. This is just one more example of everybody flew their giant jumbo jets to get there, and nobody feels the need for they themselves to reduce their carbon emissions. It's that all of us have to pay higher electricity prices and things like that. The second thing is, you know what I'm marveling about this, Greg?
What?
Is that, you know, you see, you look at that picture, there's Barack Obama, there's John Kerry, there's President Hollande, I believe the German minister is there, very high-level European officials all gathering around this table. There's not a single person on any of their staff who said, you know, this place seems a little fancy. Could we have a messaging problem here? Is there any place where the sorbet is less than $20 that we could go instead? Is there any other option for a meal after we've just had this whole big meal, this whole big thing, which Obama literally declares one of the enemies we'll be fighting at this conference is cynicism? Well, gee, way to fight cynicism by having this ludicrously opulent meal at a conference all about sacrifices.
Do they still have au bon pain? Did that even exist in Paris?
There you go. That'd be fine. Or Pret-a-Manger, whatever, those little sandwich joint. You know, they're great sandwiches. So.
Jim, on that crazy note, we'll leave it off for today, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.